It's Thursday. It's time for a fresh episode of the show. And my guest this week is Miriam Hadness. Miriam is someone who is from Frankfurt in Germany. I lived there for a number of years. And in fact, discussing where we lived before we clicked record, it transpires that Miriam literally lived a street or two away from where I used to live in Frankfurt in the so-called West End. Isn't that funny? It's a small world after all. The reason I've been looking to have Miriam on the show for a while is because she's well known, in fact, extremely well known in the world of facilitation. She's a podcaster like me, but she began in academia, which is not something you hear very often where people leave academia. It's often seen as quite a solid career. It's very much focused upon research, and not too many people then make that leap into working for themselves. But Miriam has, and it's been very successful because you'll hear today that she has three parts to her business. There is the facilitation that she does herself. There's a community, which she has subscribers to. And then she also has an agency where she works with facilitators and introduces them to clients, and she runs these programs under her own brand. So basically, she will hire out facilitators, trusted ones, which she has developed, you could say, and built relationships with through her community. So it's not often that we have someone on the show talking about this level of or going to this depth in terms of describing their own business, but this is something I think you'll find extremely valuable. This is the Training Business Podcast.
Hey, and welcome to the trainingbusiness.com podcast. Every week, we bring you exciting news and interviews with training business experts and training business entrepreneurs from around the world. Thanks for tuning into today's episode. Here's your host, Mark Garrett Hayes.
Miriam, welcome to the show.
Hello, Mark. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, we've been trying to get this lined up for quite a while. We're finally here, and it's great to have you on. The reason we're talking is twofold. First of all, you came highly recommended as a professional in terms of workshops. I've had quite a few guests on who've discussed the topic of facilitation and coaching. And I wanted to spend time today to understand your background. We'll then look at your business and then the brand that the marketplace sees. So you describe yourself as a facilitation evangelist,
yes,
podcaster, and you have a PhD in behavioral economics. Your brand is workshops.workbv. And so that suggests instantly that you are based in the Netherlands, but you're from Germany, right?
Exactly. Exactly. I ran away from Germany years ago already.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I spent a number of years in Frankfurt. So, and it, as we just found out off air, we literally were around the corner, literally the next street, which is really weird. So your business is called workshops.work. Let's talk about your background. How did you come to be in this area of creating facilitation experiences for your clients?
Maybe a little bit like the Virgin Mary got to her child.
So okay.
None of that was planned. I initially had a career in higher education. So I started as an academic doing research, was teaching economics in Vietnam, and was working as in strategy development for a university in Luxembourg. And at some point realized that the public sector was too small for me. I needed to break out. Mm-hmm. And after a year of soul searching, I realized that I was unemployable. And I started with hosting meetups. Very classic. And I call them idea parties. And only later found out that there's a name for that. People call it a mastermind. And as I was hosting these meetups, I was started to host masterminds, and then guests to the meetups would ask me if I could help them to design workshops, facilitate workshops, started even to offer me money to design and facilitate workshops. And then I realized that workshop facilitation was the thing. And as I started to introduce myself or pitch myself as a facilitator, the first reply I got was, "What? Are you a consultant? Are you a trainer?" And so I really struggled to explain what a facilitator is. And then I thought I need a marketing campaign for the professional facilitation. and the tool of workshops. So I started a podcast. And this is basically what got me rolling into everything that I'm doing today.
It's quite the journey, actually, from academia into working for yourself. Any regrets about leaving what can be, not always, but can be a comfortable tenure with a predictable career in many respects, into working for yourself where you're responsible for everything to do with the brand, the product, marketing, administration, etc.?
No regrets, luckily. And even along the way, I think what is funny is that when I look at the roles and responsibilities of a researcher, it's very similar to an entrepreneur. We are paid to read, write, and talk about it, to pitch ourselves, to sell our ideas. So I think it's not so different. What is different, and I think that's where I struggled, especially in the beginning of my career, that as a researcher, I learned that all my knowledge is a public good. So I am paid to share my knowledge as an act of service back to society. So when I switched to entrepreneurship and suddenly had to sell my knowledge, that was quite difficult. So I spent years working on my money mindset.
What was that like?
I think it's the acknowledgement that there are people out there who are willing to pay for it, and that also I'm doing myself no service and continuing the mindset of a public servant trying to run a business because I'm just burning out. And I also realized that the moment I started charging premium fees, I also have different, I track different clients and we speak on a very different level. And I think it started with hosting masterminds, something that, a darling that I had to kill. So something that might sound familiar to many entrepreneurs.
Isn't that tough when you are so tied into something, it's emotionally part of you, but that you have to let it go because it's just not what the business needs or what people are willing to pay for or invest in?
It is. And I think the most difficult is to see and to accept it. And it's funny because when we start a business, we usually have this romantic idea of what we want to do. And then we put it out in the world. And somehow the audience or the clients tell us what they really want. And if we listen, then everything else becomes very easy. And I had to unlearn to force my own opinion onto the market and just go with the flow. And I think as an entrepreneur, what we actually have to do is, and that's the most difficult, we have to do what is the easiest for us. So whatever comes effortless.
That's a great point.
Everything else we have to outsource, because only that what comes effortless to us makes us stand out of the crowd. And that's our unfair advantage, as Pat Flynn says, because whoever wants to copy us cannot, because for them it would be effort.
That's a very good point, actually. A really deep point to do something that doesn't tax us too much and doesn't cause us perhaps to be drained of energy. And there are things that we have to do sometimes, you know, taxes, administration, when we're running our own business, that can be draining. But if we follow your tip, which is to outsource the things that come or take effort from us or energy from us, and we focus on the things that are effortless, we're more likely to be successful.
Yeah.
Here's the thing, though. Are there things that you realized, I want to do them? Sorry, are there things that you realized, I want to do them because I like to do them, even though they aren't perhaps my strength? And so there's a part of you that doesn't want to let go of that because it gives you security or something else.
I think I did hold on to a bread and butter client for the first 2 or 3 years of my entrepreneurship that was important to build a little bit of momentum and maybe also confidence.
Right.
And funny enough, the moment I let the client go, which was partly by accident and partly by self-sabotaging, It was only afterwards that I realized, oh my goodness, it was that client that subsidized everything else that I was doing.
Right.
So I was in a situation where I talked to my parents, how would our family deal with the bankruptcy? And because I literally didn't know where the money in 2 months would come from and how I would pay myself or my team. And a month later, I found the biggest client, have expanded the business with them, and I'm now making double of what I did beforehand, just because I have freed up energy, headspace, and I do what I thrive in. And I think that's the irony in the part. So I hired my VA before I could actually afford her, because I didn't want to do the admin stuff that she's doing. And then I fired the client, air quotes, fired the client that drained my energy, and then made space to allow or welcome a new client that was actually in my zone of genius.
That, the way you say it, sounds easy, but actually it's very hard, right? You've got to let go of something that you might find difficult to let go of. Yeah. And you've got to then fire a client, which when you do it, you realize, oh my goodness, that's a huge chunk of income I've just turned down. Is that the right decision? You begin to second guess yourself.
Totally. And that's where I think entrepreneurship is maybe 80% mindset.
Tell me more about the money mindset. That's very intriguing. The amount of time it took for you to think differently about that sometimes odious part of business, you know, actually charging people for what you do, yes, as opposed to when you're an academic, and I've done a bit of lecturing and so on, where you feel, well, I'm doing a service here, I'm not selling myself. That sales stuff is just uncomfortable
and maybe a little bit dirty,
right? And so, it's not as pure as working as you did in academia.
And I think there are many layers to it. So one layer is, we all grow up with a sentence around money. Either earning money is difficult, or rich people are bad people. Or we all have a concept around money that very often comes in our way as we grow up. So we really have to detach ourselves from that. Or earning money must be difficult. So that's one part, just to say, to detect these sentences, life sentences, and then let them behind. The other one is, if we're doing something that comes easy to us and that we love, and we have the component of being in service to someone, so as we are coaches, trainers, facilitators, we thrive to help others to become successful. Mm-hmm. And if this on top of that comes easy to us, it's many struggle with is acknowledging that it's okay to charge for it. Because just because it's easy doesn't mean that it's worthless. And
yes,
just because we are doing good doesn't mean we are not allowed to charge for it.
Yes, it's funny how something which seems simple on the surface is actually a huge amount of mental effort. How do I put a price on what I do? It's something that I find it's easy, it comes to me easily. How can I justify charging a couple of $100 or pounds or something per hour? It just doesn't sit well with you if you think that way.
Exactly. And then I think what we don't learn when we start an entrepreneur business is how to price that it's not necessarily the hour of our work. Because if we're highly skilled, it takes us less time. So, of course, we're charging more, but it's not because there's more value. And I think let me speak about myself, my own experience. Once I realized that I'm not charging for the time that I'm spending, but I'm charging on the value that I'm creating.
Which is a different thing.
Totally different thing. And it also changes the way we communicate about our work and the way we are in conversation with our clients.
So that transitions nicely to what you do. If people were to engage with workshops.work, what does that offer the marketplace in terms of programs, courses, and other products and services?
Yeah, it's a bit complex because everything grew kind of organically and unplanned.
Okay.
So I have my business has three parts. One part is the community that I built, Never Done Before. It's a paid community for facilitators where that started as a playground where we can experiment with new tools and new techniques. Mm-hmm. And having grown this global community, we are about 100 facilitators from 40 different countries. I attracted multinational companies who are looking for online training for their global remote workforce in different languages and different time zones. So I then built a kind of agency serving multinational clients in this very particular niche where they need high quality training online. And I use community members to offer that training for the clients. So that's the second part of my business.
Interesting. You build a community, and then from that flows, or you find a natural source of quality trainers whom you've effectively coached, and now you can outsource them under your brand.
Yeah, to serve the clients. So like that, I'm acting as a kind of agency.
Okay, so that's one part of your business.
Yeah, that's the second part of the business.
Second part.
So community, paid community is one, agency is the other. And then I still do facilitative work and coaching myself. So for, and these would be one-off sessions, a strategy session for a leadership team or an offsite where they need a facilitator to design and facilitate the session.
So which of those things do you tend to outsource the most part of?
The agency work.
Okay.
I think that the agency work and the more and more also the community. So I hired a community facilitator and Anushka is just taking over all the operational things so that I can discuss with her about the strategy and show up for the fun parts in the community, which is great.
The stuff that you find easy.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. So hosting sessions, I have a money meetup, for instance, in the community where we talk about money mindset and everything that comes in the way of building a facilitation business. And the agency work, I have now outsourced most of the process to Zapier, to automations, and have an assistant who is in charge of the back end, so allocating the workshops to the facilitators and aligning on the logistics with the client so that I'm only there to train my facilitators and to check in with the clients for relationship management.
And so you take a cut then of that fee?
Yeah. Okay. I take 30 to 40%.
30 to 40%. Interesting, because I'm reflecting right now on the model I have, because I've brought in coaches to work with some brands. I'm thinking about, what is an equitable amount of money to pay people so that they feel it's worth their while, but also worth my while, because if I'm not making enough money, then it doesn't really make sense to do it. It's just a huge amount of work, can be actually.
And so this was my biggest learning last year or 2 years ago when I started with this agency model, was that I forgot to take a cut. Here we go again on the money mindset, right? Who am I to earn money while I'm not working and letting other people work for me and taking a cut of it?
It sounds like capitalism. Terrible.
Exactly. And I'm an economist.
Yeah.
Don't tell anyone. So, and then I realized that if I'm not taking a cut, then I cannot find more clients and more work for my facilitators. And then I had to find something that is actually high enough that it's worth my while, and really putting the effort in, because relationship management with such big clients, and we are talking about 70 to 100 workshops per year. And it's a community. So we have 20 facilitators working on that. So it's quite a machine.
It is. You mentioned Zapier. So just briefly for people listening, That is technology which allows one application to talk to the next. So, for example, your, let's say it's Calendly, there could be a Zap or Zapier which connects to something like a booking engine.
Yeah, or a Google Sheet, so that we can then align on the...
And who built that for you? Was that something you did yourself?
I did myself, so...
Oh, that's impressive, right?
And that's... in the beginning, so I didn't... Before I had a VA, and even while in the beginning, you see and try out what works and what doesn't. And I really love to find hacks to find shortcuts to make it easier. Mm. And I hired a Zapier coach quite in the beginning, and he did a few Zaps for me, and thereby I learned how to do it myself. And now I do it myself, and now I found a VA, a virtual assistant, who is actually also loving Zapier. So she's now doing more and more of that.
It sounds like the kind of thing that is just around the corner. I kind of fantasize about a world, perhaps not too far away, where AI can do this for me. I don't have to get my fingers stuck into Zaps and code, etc.
Where the business started, but it's not good enough yet.
No, it's not. It's not, definitely not. But it's unavoidable, because that's what the future is going to bring. And at some point, we'll have literally a co-pilot in our business where that thing but could do the accounts, could do marketing, could write copy, could join things that we don't yet understand have a connection to the other thing. It's not too far around the corner, is it?
It's not. And still, I think there are a few things that I still wouldn't outsource. And I don't know how you operate with your podcast. But when I realized how much I could outsource of the podcast process to AI, I was thinking about it for a split second and then decided to continue to work with my copywriter and my human editor because the quality is just, you notice the quality.
You do.
And I think in the long run, it will stand out and people will recognize.
They will. Automation can be taken too far where we have this like a Max Headroom AI figure where people think, I'm going to take some technology, get it to read things. So there's a dodgy voice, doesn't sound human. And it all has this feeling of just being robotic. But what you bring is that human quality, that the feeling that people are getting Miriam, they're not getting an app, right?
Yeah. And I think we are working in the trust industry, basically.
Great point.
So we are selling not only the content, but we are selling this extra layer of care, understanding, trust, also how we process information. And I think if we use the podcast or our content as a content marketing strategy, because after all...
Does that work for you? That podcast, does that bring leads?
Now it does.
Okay. What have you done to make that happen? Curious.
I'm showing up.
Okay.
258 weeks. I took, I think after 25 episodes, I took once a break of 3 or 4 weeks, regretted it, would never do that again. Yeah. And since then I show up every week, publish a podcast, always at the same time, 1.5 hours, and every week write a 1-page summary, that people can download and exchange to their email address. So that's how I built my, my list. And it's now that companies reach out and want to work with me.
Do you have a newsletter as well as a podcast?
Yeah. So the newsletter is basically, hello, new podcast episode is out. Click here to listen. Click here to download the 1-page summary. And the first bit is always whatever is going on in my life and my brain around facilitation, leadership, life.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah. You mentioned Pat Flynn, who is someone who inspired me to start a podcast years ago. So it sounds like you began your podcast somewhere back in 2018, thereabouts. Is that
right?
Yeah, me too. Interesting. And so have you ever looked back and thought, I wish I hadn't started this thing because it's just it never ends? Because they say that if you stop recording, then it kind of is like getting off a bicycle. It doesn't cycle itself.
Yeah. Every week I I asked myself, why am I doing this, writing these one-page summaries? And then I realized this is how I learn. And that's how I built the list and the trust. And I think if anyone would have told me beforehand how hard it is, I might have never started. And now deep inside of me, I just dream of becoming the next Joe Rogan.
Well, I'd be very happy with the Pat Flynn, actually. He's just such a an inspiration.
He is.
So we'll finally address the brand. So you generate leads through, it sounds like, through the podcast. What other avenues are there that you can say doing this thing brings people to my door and gets a commercial conversation going?
Yeah. Podcast is number one. LinkedIn. Okay. I'm pretty active on LinkedIn. And I've been more active with really, creating content, high quality. And that's what I learned from Pat Flynn, serve and sell. Serve and sell.
Serve and sell.
I recorded these 1 minute videos on YouTube.
Right.
And then I loved it, but I just couldn't keep up with the work involved. That was quite a good conversion as well. And I think in the world of facilitation, it's quite easy to get on other communities and host free workshops for their communities and thereby expand the visibility and credibility.
Yeah. Interesting. Okay. So finally, I guess I'm still intrigued because people say to me sometimes, I've interviewed, for example, Penny Haslam today, whom I mentioned to you at the beginning of the show, and she's formerly BBC, and she says there are two parts to her business. There is the training and coaching brand where she sells herself and laterally associates to organizations through HR, you know, the kinds of the normal business channels whereby someone in learning and development or operations would bring in a training provider or facilitator. But then there's the speaking element where she finds that it's a different product, it's a different buyer, and there's a different route to market for that as well. And she's got two different websites for that reason. But you've got three, and I think that's really interesting. I think not too many people I've had on have three. So
have
you do
two, actually.
Or two.
I have two.
The agency?
The agency is, I don't even have a proper website for the agency.
Okay, so you have two websites, but in a way you still have three parts to your business.
Exactly, yeah.
Right.
Workshops, work, and the never done before.
If you had to let one go, which would you let go of and why? Not that you have to, obviously. It's not this kind of show.
I don't know. I wouldn't. I would let go maybe the part of where I facilitate for clients.
Right. So it sounds like the agency one is something you want to grow still.
Yeah. Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. People have said to me that everyone in this business should think of exiting at some point from this business, and it's a reminder to build something of value that doesn't necessarily feature us at the core, because if we are the business, then there's nothing to sell if we are removed from the business. It sounds like you're down the road to thinking about how you can build a business that doesn't necessarily involve Miriam and doesn't require Miriam to be there.
I think this would be beautiful. Also because facilitation is the community shall be bigger than me, and it's my vision to build an ecosystem that leverages the impact of the work of other facilitators. So it's not about me, it's about the facilitation. And that's why I call myself a facilitation evangelist, right? Because I really believe in the power of facilitation. And I think there are beautiful facilitators out there.
My thanks to Miriam for being my guest this week. And you can find out more about Miriam by visiting her on LinkedIn. She has workshops.work. And she also has another brand called neverdonebefore.org. And all of the links, as usual, will be over on the specific episode page for this week's episode. Now, I mentioned last week there will be a small announcement. And here it is. After almost 6 years, next week's episode is going to be the last episode of the show for now. It might come back. It will probably come back in a different format. It might come back with a different, you could say, output. But I just want to take some time very quickly to thank you before we sign off next week for now, not just yet, but we're going to wrap things up. It's been a fantastic voyage. And I want to perhaps even have another final episode on the things I've learned over the years. And that might be the final episode at the very end of what has been a very interesting number of years. This was born back in August 2018. And I'll talk to you in another episode very soon as to why it's coming to a close, at least for now. But all of that in another episode. I look forward to seeing you or hearing from you again next Thursday. You'll hear from me because there will be an episode waiting for you on your podcast platform of choice. Until then, look after yourself and speak soon. Bye for now.
Thanks once more for listening to this episode of the TrainingBusiness.com podcast. See you next time.